Okay. Welcome everybody to the new term, the next term within the McGillis-Cahillashire. And I've got so many interesting things. I don't usually start the shear like this, but I feel very strongly that I've seen some very amazing pieces of information that I never knew about. I never knew. Just absolute data. Actually, nobody knows this kind of data. And I feel as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed it to me in the Medrash Rabbah and in my learning, and I've got to share it with you. So I'm extremely excited to tell you stuff which I can almost guarantee, one thing at least, which guarantee you don't know, which we all thought we knew in school, but which was wrong. And I can't wait to tell you that. And it's all coming out of Qeheles. Who would have thought this was coming out of Qeheles? So where did we leave off last time? We'd finished off the fifth perek, right? And we're about to start the sixth perek. Now, what's the sixth perek all about? The sixth perek is all about carrying on the theme that we ended off at the end of the fifth perek, which is the accurate and correct utilization of wealth. Okay, how to utilize riches or materialism if you have access to it in this world, which is extremely challenging, as Qeheles is going to tell us. But there's a few things that are going to intro this, which is just absolutely really, really amazing. And of all things, punct, is a Medrash Rabbah on Parshas Emor. Parshas Emor that we just learned, when it talks about, of all things, the Omer, the Korban Omer, which we are now in. It says, "Dabel b'nei Yisrael, va'amarta elahem ki sovi al aretz asher ani noisen lachem, u'katzartem es katzira, v'aveischem es oime reishis katzirechem al kohen." That's the pasuk from Emor, which is in Chof Gimel Yud, which is in Leviticus, is it Leviticus? Is it Vayikra? 23:10. And what's the pasuk telling us that we've got to give a korban omer? It says, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land which I'm going to give you, you're going to reap its harvest, and you've got to bring an omer from your first harvest to the Kohen." Now, what is an omer? An omer is a dry volume measure. It has an equivalent liquid measure called an isarain. But an omer, if you look at the Rach Noah, who calculates an omer to be 2.49 liters in volume, of barley flour, 2.49 litres. The Chazon Ish calculates it to be 4.32 litres. It's quite an amount. Now, obviously, the kohen would only take a kamitzah, a three fingers full, and that's what would be chucked onto the actual mizbeach. But you've got to bring a full omer. So really, when naming this, really, you could call it a korban litre. The name omer is of the literage. That's the measurement, the dry volume measurement of what you have to give to fulfill this precept. So an omer is a dry measure. And that's the amount of barley on the second day of Pesach that had to be given in the Beis HaMikdash, which is at the harvest time. That's the pasuk in Parshas Emor, which we, for people that are listening in, this may be years down the line. At the moment when this has been given, we've just had Parshas Emor. Unbelievable, of all things, the Medrash in Perek Chof Hay, right at the beginning of Medrash Rabbah, look at the Medrash Rabbah and on Vayikra Perek Chof Hay, and it says right from the get-go that the Medrash uses a pasuk in Qeheles in Ecclesiastes to expound this verse. And of all the pasukim is what we just learnt earlier. Amazing. It's going basically the end of the fifth parak coming into the sixth, the concept using, it also quotes from the first parak that we learnt. This verse that we've got here that I just read to you from Chof Gimel, from Leviticus 23 about giving the korban omer, is to be understood in the light of what profit does man have for all of his labour that he toils beneath the sun? Now, remember, in Gemara Shabbos, Lamed Daled, we discussed this. Chazal wanted initially to ban Megillas Qeheles. The Sefer should be locked away in a vault People should have no access to it really in public, and only the most advanced scholars should be able to learn it properly, understanding its true meanings, because it's posh pshat, it's simple understanding in several places that we've already learned so far, let alone throughout the whole Sefer, are easily misconstrued to say something which is deeply anti-Torah. Now, obviously, nothing he said was, and everything we've explained it very, very well to Baruch Hashem to say that's clearly not the case. But on a superficial level, it is the case. So Chazal say, Amar Rabbi Binyamin ben Levi, this is the Medrash Rabbah on Parshas Emor, talking about the Omer offering. Says Rabbi Binyamin, the son of Levi, at first, Chazal wanted to conceal Keheles. Why? They found things in there which seemed to turn a person towards heresy. Now they said, was it fitting for Shlomo to say such things? As what? Samech bochor, beladasecha, rejoice, young man, in your youth, in your childhood. Let your heart gladden you in the days of your youth. Follow the path of your heart and the sight of your eyes. That's what it says in Perek Yud Gimel. We're going to get to that. It's a fun pasuk. You're going to love it. But that does sound like a license to go wild. Do whatever you want. Is it possible when Moshe Rabbeinu himself said in Bamidbar, Tes Vav, 15, Lamed Tes, 39. It says, do not explore after your heart and after your eyes. Along came Shlomo, and he says the opposite. Follow the path of your heart and the sight of your eyes. That's a stira. That's a contradiction between Moshe Rabbeinu and Shlomo Melech. Moshe Rabbeinu's going to win. So, you know, it's a pack Shlomo. I'm sorry, you know, it's just, that doesn't fit that with, you know, with Torah. People who read that, pshat, posh it, you know, very, very simple, and just get a basic translation, they'll think, says the Medrash, and that it says, beautiful words in the Medrash, that the whip of punishment has been unwound. And there is no punishment for sinners because the true judge will overlook everything. But it says, once Chazal saw in the end of the Sefer, but be aware that for all these things God will call you to account. They said Solomon did well. It was good. They said, you know, at the end, if you go around behaving like that, know that there will be recompense. But still, reading those psukim out of context, which is generally how Ecclesiastes is, Koheles is misquoted, does indeed seem to give some kind of flag of permission for those that want to live a hedonistic lifestyle. So Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmoni, says Rav Shmuel ben Nachmoni, really the sages wanted to hide away Koheles because they found in it another pasuk. Because he said, what profit does man have for all of his labor beneath the sun? Says Ashur Bar Nachmani, you might say this even includes the labor of Tyra is for nothing. But Chazal took it back. Where because had Shlomo said in all labor, then indeed they would have banned it. But he said labor under the sun, and clearly Tyra is above the sun. In which case, it's okay. So there's a nusach acher, there's a, alternatively, Rabbi Yudon, Yud Vav Dalad Nun, Yudon says, beneath the sun implies that it is only for toil in earthly matters that you don't have profit for, which is in line with what Solomon really means, and of course, Torah Hashkafa. But lemala min hashemesh yeshloi. But for matters which are above the sun, spiritual matters, he has profit. So far, so good. Basically, stuff we already know, that you can definitely misquote Keheles, and that Chazal really were looking at quite a lot of the Pesukim and were not happy with this work being put into mass promulgation for fear of it being misunderstood or open contradictions and the people coming up to their rabbis and saying, oh, it says, you know, I can go do whatever I want on a bar on Saturday because Shlomo says it's fine. Has to be understood. Okay, we know that. Now, Rav Yudan, like Shmuel Bar Nachmani, were worried about the concept of what's beneath the sun versus over the sun. So there's an amazing Beis Halevi, Yosef Dov Beis Soloveitchik, Rav the Beis Halevi on Parshas Yisroi, and he darshans a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed on the Beis. So this is the Beis Halevi on Parshas Yisroi, quoting a Gemara in Shabbos 30b. And he goes off talking about the concept of above the sun, beneath the sun, which is something we've been discussing like for an entire parak, basically, right? And he says that there's this concept of it not being beneficial if it's above the sun or below the sun. See, he goes off and he discusses the fact that you'll see that not all wealth is actually all it cracks up to be. And he says that the distinction between these two things, by its nature, suggests that the two do share a common element. You're toiling beneath the sun and above the sun. But they're distinguishable from one another. Toiling for money or in business is similar to toiling for Tyra. But there is still a difference. So he says like this, Torah and mitzvahs are above the sun, and earthly pursuits are under the sun. Right? So he suggests, the Beis Halevi says, that the Medrash is talking about the fact that you could say that it could be, like Chazal is saying, that toiling for all your labor, including Limud Torah, could be a complete waste of time. Kfira, heresy, no. It depends. Says the Beis Halevi that the link between toiling beneath the sun and over the sun is as follows. If you study Torah for ulterior motives, like receiving honor or some kind of material gain, for instance, it used to be in the time of Bavel that many of parents wanted their children to become great Talmudei Chachamim, because in Bavel there were tax breaks for the Rabbonim. You had great privileges in Bavel if you were known to be a Torah sage. And a lot of their kids were told to grow up and you have an easier life if you're one of the great Chachamim. And the Medrash teaches that even such study, despite its drawbacks, is still beneficial. Because even if you grasp the Torah for all the wrong reasons, it still leads to good. So there's a Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Nun Amud Beis, that's 50b, that says a person should always engage in Limud Torah and mitzvahs, even lo lishma, even not for the sake of wanting to serve Hashem, but for ulterior motives. Because from doing that, not for its own sake, Shematok Shelo Lishma Bo Lishma, that which starts out not doing it for the right reasons could end up eventually getting to the right reason. Now, if the intent of one who sits and toils in Torah is purely for ulterior motives, he knows that, you know, he's doing it for wrong, and he has no intention of doing it for the right reason. He's doing it for some kind of material gain. That is the only reason he's doing it. He's doing it because that's what's needed and he has to fit in and that's how he wants to look. Then, even so, the Torah in itself, that's considered Torah below the sun. Even though the Torah itself that he's toiling in is actually rooted above the sun, he has brought it down to use the Torah like a spade to dig. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, he who uses the Torah as a spade to dig fades away. Now what about his Torah? The Torah he's got was drawn beneath the sun. It was drawn down for ulterior, mundane motives. But hopefully, even if he actually actively says, I want to approach Torah for all the wrong reasons, we still nonetheless hope the Torah itself will burn through that and open his heart to want to learn the Shema. Very interesting idea. Very interesting idea, no? Very interesting idea. So I really wanted to share that with you because it seems that there is a very important concept about the idea of turning above the sun and below the sun, and even the Torah can be drawn below the sun if you do so. Now, it's still beneficial for you in life. It will give you wisdom, and it may well impart great prestige and even wealth. We say, he who grasps it, you know, is grasping a tree of life, and wealth and riches are associated with it. Could be you become wealthy rich purely because of your associate with Torah. And you've got no interest in serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu Bechlal. You don't really want to know what the Torah says. You just, I got to do this for tax bracket. I enter a different tax bracket and it's much better for me because I've got a house and I've already got a mortgage. And if I can get, you know, and if I can prove I know Tosfos well enough, I won't have to pay that. It's good for me because then I can sell it off. Even if you're doing it for that, it's still beneficial, but it's beneath the sun. Even that, there could be an end of toil. So when they said, you know, we're scared that people will misuse it. What's above the sun, over the sun? It depends. Even the Torah Tekka could be below the sun, depending upon how you approach it. Which is why we're always telling people, try to learn Torah as lishma as you possibly can. Now, that was the Medrash Rabbah on Parshas Emor from the Chumash. But there is a Medrash Rabbah at the end of the fifth Perek, which is what we just finished last week, on Keheles Rabbah. And there's quite a bit to say. It's very, very interesting. We said last time, we're talking about earning money. He said that riches hoarded by their owner end up becoming misfortunate. It's a problem. So there's an amazing Rebbe Yehoshua on the Medrash that says, where do we learn out that riches gathered can actually get you into trouble? So says Rabbi Yeshua, you know who that's talking about? It's talking about Kairach, the famous Kairach from the Parsha. Kairach became wealthy, says Medrash Esther Rabbah, Zion, Hay, 7-5. When he found, we'll talk about why it's in Esther Rabbah in a second. You wouldn't have thought it'd be in Esther Rabbah, right? We'll get to that. Kairach became wealthy after discovering storehouses of money that Yosef had hidden when all the people were coming to buy bread during the famine. And he put us, there was so much money coming in. There was so much money coming in. He had to find places to put the money. We have no idea, actual hard cash. There was nowhere left. There was nowhere left. There was just so much money. Lahavdil, to make a million separations between this and that, I saw a picture years ago of the Essex police during a drug bust somewhere in Essex. And they stormed a house, and in every room, there was so much liquid cash, they couldn't put it anywhere. There was too much liquid cash. They didn't have any space to put in anywhere. They couldn't find the place to count it and wrap it up. All the cupboards, all the sinks, all the shelves were covered in banknotes wrapped up in cling film with numbers on it. Hundreds upon hundreds of pounds per grouping. Millions of pounds of notes, all neatly counted. There was nowhere to move. You had to move with the feet. They had to push aside the money to get through the house. Lahavdil, it was like that with all the money that was coming in for people paying for bread. Yosef hid a lot of the money aside into storehouses. Yosef hid that. And it's Esther Rabbah that says that. And those riches were taken by Kairach. Kairach found that. Indeed, we say he had donkeys upon donkeys upon donkeys full of sacks, full of keys. And all of the keys led to safe boxes, treasure chests, full of money. It's like unimaginable fortune. What happened? Says the Medrash Esther Rabbah, quoted by Keheles Rabbah. Those riches brought misfortune because it caused him to grow arrogant, and this is the key for the sixth Perek, about what money can and can't do. Caused him to grow arrogant and challenge Moshe Rabbeinu in a rebellion that eventually caused him to be lost along with all of his possessions. If someone had borrowed a needle from Korach's family, when the earth opened up its mouth, it swallowed even needles and thimbles. Every single penny of those was sucked into the earth and gone. And the only reason that happened was became very arrogant. He thought, you know what, I can take that job. And the only reason he became so arrogant was because he became wealthy beyond belief. Another example in Malachim Aleph, Chof Aleph, that's Kings 1:21. Navos was killed because of his beautiful vineyard, which King Achav coveted. Now, he wouldn't take it, but his wife, Izebel, who was a Gentile Phoenician princess, thought, well, I'll have him killed and you can get it. That's business as usual. That's how Phoenician princesses did business. What did we learn out from Alexander the Great last time? When those two people came in, you know, saying each one has money that they don't want the other one to not get. Each one was so mamish tzaddikim. He goes, I'll kill them both and steal the money to let the crown take all, right? So what happened? Navos was killed. By King Achav's men under Izebel's land, and that was taken from him. And what happened? That land was taken from him. He was killed and that land was taken from him. And it was, how did he get killed? He was misled, says Derech Hashem, bringing these psukim, by prophecy. All the prophets said, you should go into Ramos Gilad and you're going to have a fantastic fight there. Who was telling the prophets of the Baal, they were liars, that he should go to war? None other than Navos, the man he had killed, to get that money. He went there and got killed. Achav went there he was going to get killed. So all that money that he got from stealing the vineyard never worked out for him. Why Esther Rabbah? Why Esther Rabbah is amazing. Haman amassed unimaginable wealth by plundering the treasuries of the kings of Yehuda. And that wealth was a factor in his promotion by King Ahasuerus. Because he became so wealthy and influential, we learnt out, he had his own army. He was a general of his own army, as was Mordechai, working at that time for Persia. And they met each other, and Haman was a terrible administrator, and his army ran out of food, and he had to end up selling himself for food to Mordechai to feed his troops with a contract, which he did. He sold himself as a slave for bread. And Mordechai kept that contract. That's when they were both generals. But how did Haman get to such a state? He had money, he had vast reserves of money, plundered from the kings of Yehuda. And his wealth eventually led him to offer 10,000 talents of silver, which is a phenomenal amount of money, for the permission to kill every man, woman, and child of the Jewish nation. That, as we learned out, was in Esther Gimel 9, Esther Gimel Tess, I'm sorry. That was a whole amazing thing. It was all about the money that was given by the Machtzitz Shekel for the Adonim. He wanted to counter the power of the half shekel contribution that was made to the Mishkan. And he worked out over 40 years how much money came in, and he wanted to make sure he could top that. Otherwise, he was going to be scared that the schus of Klal Yisrael and the Midbar would override him. So frum that he would think like that. And that proposal to purchase Klal Yisrael for all that money eventually, as we learned, led to his downfall. So the money coming in ended him. There's another one. And lastly, in Bamidbar, Lamed Beis, the Shvatim, with a tremendous amount of cattle, huge amount of cattle, they turn around to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, we don't want to settle in the land proper, but we'd like to take the Transjordan, because we've got so much cattle and flock that, you know, we need more land and space to do it. Can we have that? They were the first ones to be taken into exile before any of the Shvatim, the Eitz Yosef, the Marzu, the Medrash, everyone says they're the first to go. Why are they the first to go? Because they didn't want to be brought into the mainland. So why did they not want that? Because their flock. Why? Because they're so wealthy. So we do see in several places that a influx of wealth can lead to a huge downfall later on down the line. So far, so good. Yes, Rabbi Yedekin, Shlita, what can I do for you? Got your hand up.
Thank you. the first time I'm joining the share. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned above the sun and below the sun. What's the significance of the sun and why is that the dividing line?
Excellent question. The answer is like this. The sun is a heavenly body. And it is in Olam Ha'asiyah Elyon, as you know from our Derech Hashem Shirim, it's in the outer space, essentially. It's in space outside the Earth's planet. Below the sun means anything within Olam Ha'asiyah, anything within the physical world of action. Above the sun is Olam Yetzirah, Olam Habriyah, Olam Atzilus, and then Olam Haba, etc. It's beyond the physical realm. That's the mystical basic understanding as to the fact being the sun being a dividing line. There's also ideas of the sun being a very physical thing, specifically for Esav, being given the sun while Yaakov gets the moon, etc. I.e. the idea of the sun is straight ahead physicality in the physical world. Below the sun means under the remit of the physical. Above the sun means beyond the remit of the physical alone. It's a code term.
Thank you.
Do you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions before we go on to the next bit? Okay, so now with that as an intro, so we've got the Beis Halevi quoting the Medrash on Parshas Emor, saying, you know what, you can even drag Torah beneath the sun if you misuse it. And then we have the Medrash Rabbah on Keheles saying, not so fast with all that wealth. Wealth is good, as we'll learn, it's actually even necessary to become truly wise. Truthfully, the poor can't become as wise as the wealthy. Very interesting point, as we'll discuss, and he'll say that black and white. But wealth brings with it many, many pitfalls. And we've seen numerous examples. And indeed, it's easier to find an example in the Torah where wealth brings a pitfall than where wealth definitely has no negativity and only positivity. It's easier to find that as an example open. There's quite a lot of places where we'll see that great influxes of huge wealth comes with a real risk. But we're going to see it inside. Now remember, coming back to the third perek, Shlomo's doing all this as an experiment. He lived his life in a way that we could only say was intensely hedonistic. Intensely hedonistic, but he never lost sight of the focus. He's doing it as a Torah experiment so that nobody ever else has to prove guaranteed or your money back no matter how far you go. He landscaped, moved hills and rivers just to look at them. He planted gardens with species of flowers just for the smell. He married 1,000 women, had more money than any king before him, did anything his heart desired, musical instruments, art, anything. Anything he fancied, he went for in full to prove there's nothing that beats the Torah. Which means he did it with his eye on that concept. Can I really preach this as true? Will someone else in the Kehillah, hence Keheles, that was his name, because he preached to the Kehillos, hence Keheles, will someone stand up and go, but you've never tried that wine from the north side of the vineyard from 1996, which is the greatest wine that's ever been made. And you can't get one like that anymore because of acid rain and global warming. He goes, ha, I had vineyards of the stuff. I wouldn't drink anything else. I'd brush my teeth with it. And I'm still telling you it's not good enough. I did what you said I would have, and I did it better. I did more than you could do, and I'm telling you this is the case. Now, in the sixth perek, the theme of the sixth perek, more than anything else, carrying on from the themes at the end of the fifth, is approach to wealth and the impact it can have. Okay, so remember, each perek has its own theme, and this is now the theme of the concept that is really brought in the sixth short perek. It's only Yud Beis Pesukim. It's only 12 Pesukim. It's one of the things, the shortest perek in the whole thing. Let's try to dive in with that as a basis. Oh, I've got that's that thing that most people don't know. I've still got to tell you. I really hope I get to it tonight. Where is it? It is on Pasuk Vav. You're not going to believe it. It's like things we didn't know in school. It's unbelievable. I'll give you a heads up. I'm bursting. Who was the oldest man that ever lived? I got news for you. It was not Mesushalach. 969 years is a kid. There's someone that lived longer. And we've got to learn who that was. And Solomon's going to tell. Unbelievable. Now, it's worth sticking out just for this. Honestly, if you're thinking, I've got other things to do tonight, stick it out for this. And if you're joining on the tape, honestly, just listen in. It's going to be great. Be'ez Hashem. Let's do Vav Aleph. Yesh ro'a asher ra'isi tachash ha'shemes. Again, Yudaykin, it's this underneath the sun. There's something else I've seen, I've observed something else in the realm of the physical, which really bothers me. And that is very prevalent amongst humans. Oh, I've seen it everywhere. Remember, he took out 33 years while he was exiled from his throne because of the way that he got involved with that demon, the king of demons, and it kicked him off his throne, and he went around as a commoner, and he watched people live. And he went around everywhere. He never regained his throne the same way. He was the king of all of Israel before. Afterwards, when he got back, he's only the king of Jerusalem. And he went and saw, and he says, this is horrendous. What's horrendous? What are we going to talk about? If a Kodesh Baruch Hu sees fit to make you wealthy, essentially what he's enabling you to do is do acts of chesed, loving kindness, and tzedakah with your newfound riches. That's what he's doing. If you have a windfall, that's why the money's coming your way. Straight out of Medrash Rabban Kehelas. But, and this is what Solomon laments, instead of making the most of this wonderful opportunity that Hashem's giving you, most people spend their time ensuring their wealth will be passed on to their children after them and setting up trust and hedge funds and savings accounts, maybe offshore savings, investing in property, binding the money up in ISAs or bonds. I'm not saying the concept of saving money is foolish, but saving all the money is very foolish. The more you give to tzedakah, the more one is assured of sustaining himself in Olam Haba. Al Shech HaKadosh, black and white, on Keheles. Do you want money in Olam Haba? You know, the famous story with the fox in the vineyard. Everyone knows the story. I know you probably heard it in school. There was a fox and he was walking by a vineyard and he really wanted all the grapes. There was a little hole in the fence and he couldn't squeeze through. So he fasted for 3 days and he managed to get through the fence and he ate his fill of the grapes. Now he's a big, fat, swollen fox. And he tried to get out and he couldn't get out. So he had to fast for another 3 days just to get out. On the other side of the vineyard, he said, oh vineyard, what did I gain from you? I ate my fill, but I couldn't take any of it with me. What should he have done? Chucked grapes through the hole. He should have squeezed himself in, chucked the grapes through the hole, squeezed himself out, and eaten to his fill. The more he would have chucked through the hole, the better it would have been. The only money you can chuck through the hole is the money you give to tzedakah that you keep. Everything else is going to be taken away from you. Every penny, you're going to lose it. Every penny you got. It's not yours. You don't believe it. Look at the dead. They ain't got any money. The only money they keep is the money they invested for mitzvahs. Everything else is taken away. It's not your money. It's merely being put in your account for your arbitration at this time. That's all. You're a custodian of that money, not an owner. You want to own it, you use it correctly. Otherwise, it ain't yours. If you leave all of your money to your children, it's as if you've given it away to strangers. Can you believe that? It's the Medrash Rabbah. You wouldn't think. Why? Mishlei, Chof Gimel Dalet, Proverbs 23:4. Don't weary yourself to be rich. Says the Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Yud Aleph Omad Aleph, 11a. My fathers put away their riches for others, but I will make use of them myself. What's this evil that Solomon has observed under the sun? What's going on? And why isn't it above the sun? Why is it definitely tachas HaShemesh? Riches may play an important role in enabling you to attain a chelik in Olam Haba. Without money, how are you going to do mitzvahs? And without mitzvahs, how are you going to get your piece of the next world? The only way you can justify your plot in Olam Haba is with the mitzvahs you did. The only way you're going to be able to do mitzvahs is to spend money. Now, some mitzvahs are very cheap, making brachos before food. Chazal say, you want a cheap way in? Make brachos before. It doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't cost you. You're going to eat anyway, right? But some mitzvahs are really quite expensive. Pesach? Pesach's notoriously expensive. How much did you spend this Pesach? All in. Shmua matzahs this year? I've never known them to be so costly. It's £5 a sheet, £5 a matzah. You've got to utilize money for good purposes. And you can also utilize it for pursuing worldly pleasures. There's a balance that's got to be struck. If you utilize your money for lusting and craving of worldly things, the money itself actually becomes a source of evil. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu the half shekel coin that we mentioned earlier, which is to be used in order to count the Jews and to give a tribute to God to atone for their chelik in their sin, and Hashem said, look, you give me your redemption money and I'll let you go, and you can mold that into the sockets of the Mishkan. He didn't show him a coin. He showed him the look of a coin made in fire. And the Chasam Sofer says, of all things, why fire? Answer, fire can be destructive or constructive based upon how it's used. So too with money. Money's like fire in that regard. Money is not intrinsically good. Money is not intrinsically bad. Money is merely a facilitator, which could lead to either, depending upon your utilization of it. Solomon is very upset that, like a disease that has spread amongst mankind, is the misuse of funds. Pasuk base. Ish asher yitain loy ha'elikim, osher, a man who God has actually, God made him rich. I made myself rich, it was good business decisions. Who gave you the bracha? It was my nose. I smell out the deal. Yeah, who gave you the ability to smell out the deal? Who invented economy? And he gives him wealth and honor covered. He lacks nothing for his soul. Yet he does not give him the power to eat of it, but a stranger eats it. Someone else will take his money. Oh, ze hevel v'choli rahu. This is a vanity and a deep sickness, an evil sickness of mankind. God supplies someone with riches on condition that you will use them correctly. What does it mean he lacks nothing for his soul? The meaning is that he can use his wealth to achieve even spiritual perfection. It mentions he's lacking nothing for his soul. V'einoi choser l'nafshoi. He's meant nothing for his spirit. He can fulfill the goal. What's that? You want to keep Shabbos? You want to keep Pesach? You want to keep Yom Tov? You want to keep Sukkos? Things cost money. You won't lack anything for your soul. You should always daven that you have enough to fulfill the mitzvahs, the way that Hashem wants you to fulfill them. Quality mezuzahs. Quality. There can't be a mezuzah which you spend less than £40 on, which is going to be good enough. You've got to look to £40 a mezuzah. £38, £40. Minimum for a decent mezuzah. You can't cut corners on that. You should have enough. You may have 11, 20, 20 doors in your home. I don't know, that need it. That's what, £40 times 20. And they've got to be checked. That's £5 a pop, £10 a pop. It's not much, but you know what? It takes money. Solomon is lamenting the fact, and listen, apart from the fact that it's sick, that people don't use it well, you know what he's upset about? He's upset for the people. He's upset for people. The people themselves don't even enjoy the money they've got. You should know, on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem sets aside the amount of money you're going to get, and how much of it you're going to enjoy and how. The amount of, the quality of enjoyment you're going to get. He'd set yourself £1 million. £1 million. You ain't going to enjoy a penny of it. The only thing you can enjoy is looking at the bank statement and seeing all the numbers. That's it. That's the end of your enjoyment. That's also in the Gezeirah on Rosh Hashanah. A secretary on £30,000 a year may get more benefit than her boss, who's the head of a legal firm, on £4 million a year, who has nothing but worry and ulcers over that money. He's got more money, quantitatively, than her, but he enjoys it far less. And that's also in the decree written on Rosh Hashanah. God doesn't give him the power to eat of it sometimes. You won't be able to actually utilize it. He'll give it to someone else. You're just a holding bank for someone you never met. And you worried over that money. It wasn't even your money. It's Yenem's money. God's already set it aside for someone else. Solomon seems to think that man is intensely naive, that he doesn't jump at the chance of utilizing his money for Olam Haba. And he calls that vanity an evil disease. What is actually preventing you from utilizing your money correctly? What's actually stopping you? Answers, the Medrash, the Al-Sheikh, everyone said, what's the actual reason? Answer, an evil eye. You begrudge others and you're too busy being miserly. That prevents you from even deriving spiritual benefit from the money. It's so potent that you won't even use the money yourself. You've got the money, I won't use it. Now, this does not mean you should be like, live for the now. He's going to berate people that think like that. That's coming up in the next verse. Oh, live for now. I've got it now. Use it. That's foolishness. We'll work with that. But the fact that you've got the money, you just want to hedge it away, doesn't mean you should just spend it on yourself. We'll get to it. It's a balance that's got to be struck here. This particular pasuk base, refers to those who are rich, but only spend the barest minimum of their wealth, keeping their money locked away in banks and funds until it eventually passes on to a son who didn't work a penny for the money. And even worse, it might well be inherited by the man who marries your widow. I think in my lifetime, the great example that I've seen was Heinz Kerry. I think it was Kerry that went against George Bush in the first run many, many years ago. George Bush had his presidential campaign and he was fighting against a friend of his called Kerry. Family name is Kerry. And he married a woman who kept her maiden name because her maiden name was Heinz, as in the ketchup, as in the baked beans, Heinz. Now think about it. All that money for Mr. Heinz, who died, has now ended up being spent millions on a presidential campaign which didn't even make his widow the first lady. Right down the toilet. All those ketchup bottles. Ah, I'm a rich man. For who? For Mr. Kerry to spend that. Oh, that must have stung. That must have stung in Shrine. What happened to the money? You gave it to another man. That can happen. That can happen. You're saving and saving and saving. You don't realize it's for another guy. A person given a divine gift of wealth and honor, and he doesn't give away anything to anyone else less fortunate, those people may lack the barest necessities. And he could acquire an inconceivable amount of shemaim for this, an unbelievable plot in Olam Haba. But the only reason why he's been blessed with the riches is to give it. And he couldn't give it because of an ayin hara on himself. Ah, they don't deserve it. I've got to keep it just in case for a rainy day. All right. But what are you going to use it for? Eventually, I mean, you're going to plan out some kind of... God desires him to utilize that money, right? And if he doesn't, God will say, you know what? Listen to this. This is unbelievable. It's like a maral. It's a maral. It's unbelievable. It's a worth coming for moment. Since you didn't want anyone else to benefit from the money I set aside for you, you won't benefit from it either. If that's the way you want it. If you don't want people to benefit from this money, then indeed, people won't benefit from this money. You included. I'll give it to someone else. Medrash Bamidbar Rabba Chof Ches Ches. The Medrash on Bamidbar 28:8 says, a Kodesh Baruch Hu does not forge coins. What does that mean? He doesn't make new money. He's an economist constantly balancing the scales. He doesn't print more money. He takes from one and gives to the other. Medrash Rabba. So deep. Such an economical concept. He's not going to make new money. It's okay. I'll just jig around the funds. He's like the ultimate accountant, knowing from which, you know, you can take a bit from here, a bit from there, jiggle out the day. He could do it. I don't need to print anything new. If a person decides he's not going to give it, Hashem will strengthen his miserliness in that person's heart and say, fine, you don't want to give it, to force him to keep all that money so that the next husband of his wife will take the money. All of his wealth was a deposit which was left with him while he lived, and he had no benefit from the money at all. If you're not going to use the money for benefit, then you won't have any benefit from it. I'll give it to someone else. Psh! He's not going to get it either way. That's midah keneged midah. Measure for measure recompense. Because he refused to benefit his own soul by dispensing tzedakah during his lifetime, his own material self will be punished in that he will be deprived of that very money he wouldn't give. Solomon sees this happening left, right and center. And you can hear him crying out, going, this is ridiculous. He, Solomon, can't stand seeing this. He's like, you fools. Don't you see what's happening? He's giving a social critique for your benefit. And he said, this is a hevel, this is a vanity. It's an emptiness. If only a person would realize why he's been blessed with the riches, would act accordingly. He goes, they're empty, they don't get what's happening. And he says, why does he say? Okay, hevel would have been enough. But why does he have to say, for cholera, it's an evil sickness. What's the man of Gemina, vanity versus an... What's the difference between a straight vanity and an evil sickness? What's the evil sickness? Here's the sickness, and listen very carefully. Why is it a disease? Says the Medrash that once you've fallen into the habit of miserliness, of being a miser, of being stingy, it's a disease that is almost impossible to rid oneself of. It seeps into your very being. This is a very important rule. It was a worth coming moment. Being stingy is something which is a disease of the human mind and spirit. And once you're afflicted and bitten, but it's like HIV, it's almost impossible to remove it, so to bleach it out of you. It's in your system now. And Solomon has seen this. He says that's why it's an evil sickness. First of all, it's a vanity. When you look at it ostensibly as a philosophical concept, it's a complete empty. You're not going to keep it anyway. Anyway, you know, economically. Number two, you can't get yourself out of seeing it that way, because you've been bitten by the stinginess bug. And that's it. You know, that's it. You've been bitten. It's not easy to possess a lot of money. You have to be very careful about how you spend it. And if you're rich, you can acquire yourself a great portion of Olam Haba with the money that you've been blessed with, because we said at the end of 5:18, which is what we finished off last week, it's a gift from God. It's a gift from God. If you eat from this table and next table, you have good life in this world, good life in the next. It's mamish a gift from God. But under regular, normal, standard circumstances, generally, money can lead to a person's downfall. As the four or five examples we brought from the Medrash Rabban Koheles here, regarding Kairach, regarding Haman, regarding who else? Navois, regarding the Shvatim with their great amount of flock. They wanted the Transjordan, which is bad. Moshe Rabbeinu was deeply upset with them. He said, that's you don't want them. Oh, I had this on the Meraglim, it's terrible. You can't, okay, we'll go fight. But we want the land. Ugh. Even if you have everything, a long life and many children, it will do you no good. Why? Pasuk Gimel. Im yoled ish mea. If a man will have 100 or even hundreds of children, and live shonim rabois, many, many years. However long he lives, his soul will not have enough of the good, and he won't have a burial. We need to explain what that means. I say, says Solomon, that a stillborn is better than such a person that's lived a long life with lots of children and lots of money. Is it? Really? A stillborn? That's a very intense analogy, is it not? A man might be blessed with many, many children and long, long years, but at the end of his life, his soul will feel no satisfaction. Mishlei, Lamed Aleph Chof Hei, Proverbs 31:25. He will be able to laugh at the time to come. What does that mean? We said last time that before a person dies, Hashem shows him a vision of the reward in store for him so that his body doesn't feel as if it toiled for naught. It's going to die, it's going to rot, and it feels as if it's put in a whole lifetime that didn't go anywhere. And now the soul just leaves because it's, you know, it doesn't die at that moment. It carries on another life. But the body is about to die, mamish die. And it thinks, well, that was a waste of time. Kadosh Baruch Hu shows the body and the soul this visage that we talked about last time, right? If you haven't joined us for that one, go and listen to that last year to understand what happens, what you see, and why it brings joy to both body and soul. When that person is shown that heavenly reward, the soul is satisfied and the body sleeps in peace because it knows it's going to be resurrected and it's got what to look forward to. But what use are children and a long life and money if your soul finds no satisfaction at the end of it? If you don't keep mitzvahs, he's not going to receive a portion in Olam Haba. And no good will be shown to the body and the soul just prior to death. Because he didn't earn anything. Now then, the soul will be incredibly distressed. And the body will be in a frenzied panic. And it will be like he has no burial. Meaning that he won't be buried at all. He'll have no burial for himself. Because his grave will be shared just with worms and maggots. And evil creatures, evil demons that will suck from it, which is normal. But that's all he has. All he can look forward to at the moment of his death is worms and maggots and shindalads. Nothing in Olam Haba. He's not going to be shown anything because he didn't get it. He used that beautiful long life. Yeah, mitzvah shmitzvahs. His body will be eaten away quickly and he won't last until the time of Olam Haba. For such a person, says Solomon, better he died as a miscarriage. Why? Such a child only ever lived in its mother's womb. And maybe it was there only to atone for some misdeed committed in a previous existence. Those who have all the money they could wish for, but don't appreciate mitzvahs that they bring to their body and soul, aren't even on the level of a stillborn that died to atone for a previous sin, because at least it was here on business. At least he got something done. All he needed to do was be born and then die, or just be a miscarriage, and it's fixed up whatever he needed to do from its previous existence or whatever sin that was there. This guy's lived a whole life, didn't get anything done. At least the stillborn got something done. When you're seeing the world from Solomon's eyes, where everything is like an open book and it is super crystalline, and he has the greatest wisdom of any man that's ever lived, greater than that of Moses, greater than that of the Messiah, and he sees what's going on, he himself laments at human behavior. He can't take what people are doing. I think it must have been a very solitary individual. Like, he looks at other people and goes, these people are false. There's no one on his level that can see it clear. Only the greatest sages. We're going to have to stop here. I don't particularly want to end on this particular talk. Before we understand the next pasuk, pasuk Dalad, we didn't get to the magic pasuk Vav, which talks about the person who lived the longest life. I'm so sorry. I'm so excited to tell you about it. I'm bursting to tell you, but whatever. Pasuk Dalad, before we understand, but you've got to understand there's two types of stillborn. There's two types of stillborn. There's type one and type two. Strange thing to talk about, right? One type of miscarried fetus or an actual stillborn child is the son of a righteous person. And it could be a soul, if it's a son of a righteous person, of a very saintly person from a previous incarnation. And as it's born dead, the sin that it committed in its previous incarnation is automatically atoned for, enabling that soul to achieve complete perfection. And its only need to come into this world was in the form of a fetus for its mission to be accomplished. That's it. That's all it needed. Now, this is pretty intense stuff. Again, we're learning this theoretically, right? I'm just talking about what another type of stillborn is, a stillborn that was conceived as a result of sin and is ejected from the body at an early stage that no one is aware of, and it doesn't purify its soul. It didn't even get anything done for itself. Regarding that second type of stillborn is the next pasuk. In that case, Pasuk Dalet says, its coming is futile. It's not here to atone for anything it did previously. And it departs in darkness. And its very name is veiled in darkness. Such a fetus had no spiritual mission to fulfill by being born and dying. And after it dies, its name is veiled. It's lost. It doesn't have the privilege of at least entering this physical world beneath the sun and seeing the sun. That's what the Gemara Shaba says in Kuf Lamed Hay 135, Omad Aleph, side A, that at least a soul comes in. There's a certain benefit and a certain merit in being considered one of those alive in the world, to have at least lived in the world, seen the beauty of it, and had some kind of impact in it. For the souls that have not yet been born, it's a very great privilege to at least come to the world. Even though they don't want to come here because it's so risky, it's a very great privilege to be considered amongst one of the living. To just see the world, do something in it. He carries on Hay and Vav about what's going on, and then he starts revealing a secret about the most long-lived individual that ever lived. Maybe for homework you could look up who lived longer than Mesushelach. Wasn't Elianavi. Elianavi hasn't died. I'm not talking about people that didn't die a regular death. A regular person that lived and died longer than 969 years. He's going to talk about him. Very interesting idea. Be'ez Hashem, we'll do that next time. Very interesting idea about coming into the world is a chashivas nili that you're here. It's a great honor and privilege for you to be part of this world, to see the place. There's a God's abode. It's a big deal just to be here. Obviously, your job is to do Torah mitzvahs and earn as much as you can for Olam Haba, right? But merely being here is a big deal. Some children never even make it that far. We'll talk about what's going on and how people that misuse their wealth could be comparable to such. Very intense examples, right? But that's what we're discussing. Rabbi Sai, thank you so, so much for turning up. I really appreciate it. If there's any questions, now's the time.